Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters. And we're still talking about the city of Cambridge.
Yes.
Shocking.
And some, and some further things that happened at the city council meeting.
Yeah. Actually, let's say one thing. This is a relatively quick one, which is...
Oh, yeah. The cannabis.
Yeah, the thing is, so we know recreational marijuana is legal, though it's taken a while before the rollout of various licenses really happens.
And stores,
we don't yet. We have some medical marijuana dispensaries in Cambridge.
Yeah, but, Revolutionary which Clinic way out on Fawcett Street.
Probably all of which will eventually be recreational as well.
That's good. I like where it is. It's out there. I didn't even know it was
right,
there.
Right, but we have one coming right into the heart of Central Square soon enough. But anyway, one of the things that hadn't been, that the city council had to act on, so the manager's agenda brought back an item that says, well, you have to adopt the state enabling legislation to enables you to enact a local tax in addition to whatever the state seems to get. I think the state gets a cut, but there's also a local
option. There's a lot of taxes
as well.
On all this stuff.
Yeah. So, I don't forget what the range of possibilities were. It might have been up to 3%. So the manager's recommendation was, no shock here, go for the 3% of all recreational, I think it's recreational, maybe it's all cannabis sales at some of these dispensaries and pot shops and whatever you want to call them, right? So when they open up, then money will be coming in. And the city council unanimously said, sure, let's do that, right?
Yeah.
So when they arrive, then the city will start getting some revenue. One of the things I had made a comment in my usual snarky comments before the meeting, which is like, okay, they're going to do this, but no earmarks, please. I mean, in other words,
you feel that way about the short term thing too, right? Because that's going to be
there's a problem I think just generally in terms of how you do revenue financing in cities, where you start designating the money that comes from this source must go to this, and the money from this go to that. It ties your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you could always change the law down the road, I suppose. But so there was recently a proposal, very well intentioned, to support the arts in Central Square and elsewhere.
Oh, right, yeah.
So they said,
use the cannabis funds. The short-term rental money, too, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I thought, the thing is, there's a reason why they have a budget process.
Yeah.
The thing is, if you want to have money go toward the arts, you say, Mr. City Manager,
a budget request,
please,
right.
We would like to see more funding for the arts. And whether the money comes from cannabis sales, short-term rentals, whatever, I mean, there's certain things that money that under state law has to be designated for specific uses. Like, for example, if the city generates revenue through parking fines and violations, they can't throw that money in the general fund and just use it to spend it on whatever they feel like.
So it's used on traffic and parking.
It has to be related. You have to make the connection. So the thing is, a lot of the bicycle infrastructure, they've made the case that they can use that for that because
sense.
It's sort of road related, right? But if they wanted to sort of take the money from parking fines and drop it into the Affordable Housing Trust, that would be a non-starter. You can't do it, right? So, and same thing too, with the fees that for resident permit parking, right? Then those funds have to have at least some use related to that.
Who would argue against that?
There's really no basis of argument. Yeah. I mean, that's the state law. But the thing is that for the most part, revenue that is generated, like hotel motel taxes,
where does that go?
Just goes into the general fund. And then when the city, passes its budget, which covers school costs and
everything else
the city likes to support,
Then
there's just lots of revenue sources and then lots of expenditures.
Yeah. So you're just saying,
don't
this,
earmark it. You're
right,
tying
I
the
agree.
Manager's hands and in fact, the future may shape up differently than you think how it should be today.
Well, I don't know if you saw it. I think it was in the Sunday Globe. There was a big article about the black market in marijuana versus all these stores and how some people are just still going to buy it because it's cheaper and it's accessible. Some guy said I could go to Whole Foods and get my organic, but I've been eating McDonald's since I was a kid, and I'm still standing.
We'll see what the future holds. I don't know, because maybe the nickel bag pot emporium will open up someday. Who knows? But for the most part, the targeted clientele at most of these recreational marijuana places are not the guy just trying to pick up a nickel bag.
No, but it also, on the other side of it, to start one of these businesses, and that's another issue about, and then you get into social justice and who can run. There's so many taxes involved in this now that in order to get a successful business, you're going to have a lot of startup money and also charge a lot because there's so many expenses now when you're above board.
Right, right. So most of these people, I think, are coming in with some backers.
Have big backers.
And maybe you don't see who they are, but they're...
I just found out about an organic farmer that is now working with us. I swear to God.
You know, I always people make this out as if this was all about marijuana. I always thought it was all about the money. It's just another business opportunity in another place. And everybody wanted to get in on the ground floor.
Yeah. Well,
you know, so that's
beyond
the way it
goes. I'm not sure I could even.
So anyway, so, anyway, you know, so that's when they arrive,
it should go
into the general fund.
I agree.
Right?
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're going to have a situation where the people are going to say, well, we have to encourage them to put up more pot stores because we need the revenue.
We're allowed to have eight or nine in the city. And it's already, like, I think three is beyond too much, but that's me.
Yeah. Now, another item that was part of an order from the previous week, I think from Dennis Carlone, but I'm not 100% sure, basically said that whenever somebody files seeking an upzoning.
Oh, this is the upzoning, yeah.
That in fact the city should do an analysis of what additional value is basically
they would get
handed over,
mm-hmm.
you know, developable potential to the petitioner. In other words, so the city's we're giving you zoning to allow you to build bigger or denser. What's that worth to you? And then they keep making the point that, well, during the Volpe rezoning, which wasn't really rezoning, it was actually establishing zoning that didn't previously exist.
Right, because we didn't own the property.
Right, because it was federal, right? So the thing is that in doing that, Dennis Carlone and others have pointed out, I think correctly, that when you're sort of doing the bargaining about what community benefits, it would be nice to know.
And this is beyond linkage and inclusionary.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
So, you know, it'd be good to know kind of, all right, how much benefit are you people really getting, right? And that was made subject to the charter right by the mayor. And then it came up again last night. And but with an amendment, or a couple of amendments. Now, the crux of the amendments for this is that the original order basically said, well, what are the benefits, financial benefits that the petitioner is getting if we grant them the upzoning, and then the city would then use that as sort of a bargaining point for how much you got to give back to the city, right? But I think Mark correctly pointed out that in fact sometimes when there's an upzoning it happens, for example, one that produced a fair amount of housing, including subsidized housing units, if the city views that as a benefit, or if in fact there is now additional tax revenue coming from the development every year from now to the end of time, that shouldn't that be factored into the analysis? Because the city may already be getting a substantial benefit.
So is that now an amendment?
Yeah. So then that would be made part of it. But I pointed out to Mark after the meeting, I said, well, you know, it's interesting, kind of a one-way street thing here, because, you know, I've been around long enough to remember that there was all the rage back in the late 90s, was downzoning petitions. You know, the Cambridge Residence for Growth Management was doing downzoning petitions.
Whatever happened to them? Because it looks like it didn't work.
No. But that's the whole point, is that in fact, during that period, the city council voted a lot of downzonings, citywide downzonings.
Really?
Now, the thing is, if you have a provision now, which is what's being proposed here, that you're going to calculate how much value you're giving the developers by giving them an upzoning, then it would be logically consistent that if should we go into another period where there are downzonings, that you should calculate how much financial potential is being taken away from the property owner by reducing what they can do on the site. And so, in other words, a two-way street.
How often does a downzoning petition come up?
Not lately.
Yeah.
But part of the and I think it was Hugh Russell on the planning board pointed this out, but others have as well, which is that quite a few of the upzoning petitions, like at Novartis and a few other kind of site-specific, but not to the point of being spot zoning, they were basically petitioning to get allowable height and density back that actually they previously had down. Before
I see.
The downzoning period happened.
I see.
So I kind of maybe purely an intellectual matter, but the point is that, you know, if you basically downzone to take away potential, and then when you bring it back up, you say, now give us something, but in fact, it's basically a zero-sum proposition.
So you're saying some of these developers may look back at the history of this
process. Well, they may look back at that, I think, but that's not a lot you can do. In fact, by the way, let's be clear that all this really does is ask for an analysis of what the financial benefit is. Right. It doesn't mandate anything.
Right, just says,
it's just useful information.
In negotiation, maybe, with other stuff.
But I would just argue that, you know, whenever you change zoning, to either allow more development potential or less, you are changing the value of the property. What can happen?
And it's only for developments more than 50,000 square feet.
Right. Things that are fundamentally consequential. I think that's the threshold for things like traffic studies as well.
Oh, it
and,
is.
And design review and various other things. You know, it's for little itty-bitties. You don't necessarily have to go through all of that. You can do a lot of things you could just do as a right otherwise. So anyway, I thought it was an interesting development. In the other
sense. So it'll probably take a while to get that back, I would suspect, because they really need to do a financial kind of assessment.
I think Dennis Carlone pointed out that, you know, the thing is many people kind of know already currently. They say, well, if you want to develop in Kendall Square, it's worth X number of dollars per square foot. So if the zoning says this will give you an additional 100,000 square foot of development,
you
just multiply it by whatever that figure is,
well,
and they say, there you go.
And so then they can look at, okay, what are you getting back for that? Or what are they giving you? What benefit are we getting for that upzone?
You'd have to factor in a few other things.
Sure.
But I don't think it necessarily... I mean, and honestly...
It doesn't have to be that difficult.
It doesn't also have to be superbly accurate down to the $10,
right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, it could be if you just... I think really what the council needs is a good ballpark estimate so that when they're getting into negotiations, they can say, well, it's kind of... This is the benefit or this is the not so benefit, you know, for that. So... Anyway, I thought it was an interesting idea, you know, I hope it isn't just used or abused to basically say, well, we can't allow you big fat cat developers to build this thing here because we're not going to, we think it's morally wrong that you should get benefit, right? You know, in my kind of worldview about this should never be about quid pro quos anyway. The thing is that you should really be granting development potential at particular sites because you think it's fundamentally still a good idea to have density here and maybe not have density there. It shouldn't be based on how much you can get out of it, you know. I mean, it's a factor, but you know, really good city planning shouldn't just be about the cash. So anyway, that's my wacky world.
That brings me back to the infrastructure thing. I think, was it Steve Kaiser that brought up about...
By the way, Steve Kaiser has been quietly generating some amazingly great histories.
He's a very bright person.
And he sends me some of them, and I need to publish these or something if he doesn't get around to it.
He goes to the Cambridge Port, you know, the whole thing. Yeah. '90s, very knowledgeable about. But he mentioned something about if infrastructure was really a focus, we would have had a bridge in Alewife a long time ago.
That's true.
Yeah. It's just... You know, well, those kinds of things are important.
Right. Of course, but a long time ago, you would have had a significant amount of the cost would have been covered by federal dollars. And that's the big difference between then and now.
Oh, that's so a lot now, more federal money back then.
Yeah. So whenever you talk about, well, we want a bridge at Alewife because it makes good sense from a planning point of view, it does.
But it made even more sense back then.
Right. But the way you do it now is you say, okay, the developers and the abutting properties, they have to kick in money so that we can get it. Because you have to generate the funding more locally because you can't count on the federal government to cover it.
That's funny that if the federal money was available, why it didn't go forward.
For something like that, I don't know.
I don't know the history of it.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the bridge over the tracks at Alewife actually goes back to, I think, late 70s. So
right, well, I know, you had
money,
that in the 70s.
Money existed then, but the thing is, they never really carried out the full, you know, the fish book.
I don't think anyone saw ahead what was going to happen down there.
Or maybe they didn't think that the federal dollars were going to just go away, and then they
well,
did.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We don't
you
look
know?
Ahead.
That's true, it's
Who
true.
Who thought we'd have this president?
Yeah.
He's going to talk about infrastructure, supposedly.
What is it? Oh, is tonight State of the Union?
Oh, gosh, 9 o'clock.
You know,
I said Stacey Abrams is going to give the rebuttal.
When the presidential election, okay, the following one, I've told this to everybody. I said to myself, I'm just basically going to live perpendicular to Mr. Trump. So I often don't know what he has said.
I know people who won't even listen to him, and I cannot stand hearing him. But the optics of this, because now you have Nancy Pelosi right behind him.
Yeah.
Because she's. That people are looking forward to that.
Political theater.
Political theater.
Yeah. Right, so yeah. Anyway, I'm gonna watch an old movie.
You're not gonna watch it.
I'll probably watch Turner Classic Movies.
Oh, you are such an old.
I'll read about it tomorrow. And then
you have cable now. You can watch a whole lot more than you don't get.
I know
Turner,
that's the point. I have options.
No, I don't. You don't get that through your basic cable.
I don't have basic cable. I have Glorious cable now.
Well, even extended, I don't think you can get Turner Classic.
Sure do.
TCM?
Yeah.
All right. I gotta check that out.
I'm paying for it. What the heck?
All right.
Right? You only go around once in life.
Yeah, so that's why I give HBO.
By the way, just one quick note. The big hairy controversy about the honey locust trees in Vellucci Plaza in the square. They're gone.
Well, four are gone, right?
Four are gone.
Two are left,
some people were griping because
were you there? Did you see them?
No, but they basically put a barrier around the whole thing. Mm-hmm. They had like six policemen. More than six.
Well, all right. Yeah, I just saw some photos.
I think they emptied the police station out just to ring it. And then people were saying, like, all of this, you know, for a few little old ladies who were trying to, 40
people
you know,
or something.
Yeah, and the thing is,
nobody tied themselves to the tree.
Well, but the point is, if they didn't put up the barricades,
I know at least one person who would have done that, guaranteed would have been tied
to a tree.
Good point.
Or been standing on the front of the bulldozer. So,
yeah.
So the city said, well, we don't want to do that, so we're going to do a little overkill, and they did.
Yeah.
So they prevented the conflict, and they took down the trees, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, ultimately, I thought the trees were a little bit of the red herring in this because they think the real issue is
I don't like the redesign.
That's the real issue.
Yeah,
I feel
bad for the trees, but to me, it was more about the redesign.
No, that's
you
how
could
I feel
do something
about it
differently,
as well.
And
yeah.
It would have been better.
But anyway, it is what it is, and it's going forward. So we just see what the future brings. You know, so. By the way, it is, I don't know, where do I
have
it? It's Vellucci Plaza. Now, nobody's going to be able to see these here, but I was going to get a kick out of these things. We were just joking, maybe somewhere, you know, this is actually what I'm holding here, and nobody can see it, right?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll try and put it so you can barely see it.
Here, let me
this
go. We'll walk over and put it closer. You want me to do that?
Yeah, I don't know, you can give it a shot. But
all right, I'm getting out of my seat.
Which will probably put us all out of focus or something here, but... Yeah, we'll see. But the thing is that, there we go. All right. So anyway, what you see here is a coin that was actually made by Mayor Al Vellucci. So back when he was mayor, it was around the time of the centennial of the City Hall.
Egotistical
yeah,
of him,
I know. But the thing is, that's what I loved about Al Vellucci is
how many were made?
How many mayors would David Marr have fashioned a coin with his own picture on it? Would Denny Simmons have put his face?
How many did he make? Is this a collector's item?
You know, it is now a collector's item.
You have two. Were they worth anything? Just a commemorative coin, right?
Somebody offered me $20 for one of them the other
day. Oh, I would have taken it.
No, I'm keeping it. So I've been joking. I'm gonna say we're gonna have the bidding has begun, you know, for my Al Vellucci coins.
When was his death? Do you remember?
I forget exactly when he passed away.
He
it's been a while.
So.
It was at least probably 15 years ago now.
Okay.
I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember when he was mayor. It was interesting character.
Well, you've been here longer than I have, but I've been here since.
Al Vellucci was a character. He wasn't always a great counselor. Sometimes he was a great counselor.
Mm.
Sometimes he was a great mayor. He was always funny as hell.
Yes.
All right. And he liked controversy. And,
So who was his heir apparent? Was it Toomey?
Yes. So there was a rule. I doubt whether it's true now, but politically, just to delve into the political briefly, it was kind of a rule that if you were in East Cambridge and there was your sitting counselor, you didn't run against the sitting councilor. And if you did, it was considered like a pretty hostile act.
Yeah. Okay.
Some people did it, right? But it wasn't really looked kindly upon. So there was more of a succession. So Al Vellucci, when he left the council, that's when Tim Toomey was joining the council.
And he was already a state rep at that point?
No, he was not. That happened later. So I think there are some people believed, though it never happened because Tim stayed, and he's still on the council today.
Yeah.
That at one point maybe he would move on into the state legislature, and then Joe Grassi, who was on the school committee, might be the heir apparent.
Didn't he run? Joe Grassi for school, for council?
No, he just stayed on school committee. Oh. I don't think, but that's the point, is that I don't think he would have run for council.
Mike Connolly challenged Tim.
But you know, these are, but you know,
and
the thing
then
is,
he then took the his state seat.
Right, but the thing is, there's a difference between having an East Cambridge address and being an East Cambridge candidate, right?
He didn't have an East Cambridge address.
He had an East Cambridge address. But I don't think anybody in East Cambridge.
No, I know that he represented a whole different thing, but it is interesting how that all kind of gets.
But the thing is, it's just the changing nature of the city is that I think that kind of the depth of the neighborhood loyalty of East Cambridge is probably not.
It's changed.
Not what it was. It's still there.
So
but
who's the North Cambridge? Kind of have a few.
Once upon a time, it was Tom Danahy. And then when Tom left the council, you know,
Danahy
Park was named after Tom Danahy. The thing is that it was like the big question in 1993 when there were a lot of candidates, a bunch of them, like George Spartacino, Jimmy McGrail,
Jimmy
McSweeney, Anthony Galluccio. Everybody was vying for the Danahy vote.
Yeah, I see.
You know, I mean, it's not like there was a succession, really, exactly.
No, but then
everybody runs citywide.
David Marr.
He lives on Appleton Street. He's more West Cambridge, but it's, you know, Huron Village area.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there was a sort of an implication that the people who were loyal to certain people were...
Right,
you'd move on to the next one. So,
yeah.
You know, when Lenny Russell died, Sheila Russell was elected.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Right? Okay. When Walter Sullivan left, Michael Sullivan followed, right?
There's this family.
Yeah, so there's kind of a tradition that has carried on. I don't think that it really works that way anymore.
No.
But there are a few parts of the city where at least it works a little bit that way.
Right.
And East Cambridge
also the whole, you know... whole white guy thing has sort of changed.
Yeah, no, everything's different. You know, it's absolutely different these days, no question about it. So there was one other thing that I thought was worth mentioning. There was a committee report. It was a proposal to sort of...
On the youth, the university. It was generated by a Harvard student, there was an attachment to this policy.
Now, I mean, I don't think I'm at all surprised that idea would have floated because there was, in the last municipal election cycle, there were some graduate students who were proposing rezoning in Fulby.
Right.
Connolly, the aforementioned Mr. Connolly, was very much sort of in cahoots with some of the graduate student reps at MIT, you know, mutual benefits, I suppose.
Yeah.
You help my political career, I'll help push your agenda. So the thing is there are some people who are graduate students particularly, but not always, not entirely, who were, to some degree, want to get sort of involved in affairs. I think some of the bike enthusiasts certainly are coming from either the university community or relatively recent graduates, right? So anyway, there was this idea that we should have a commission, right, about this. And I kind of like the idea of getting more of these people involved. But I kind of was sort of wondering about that. I said, well, what would the commission do? They would just sort of sit around and talk about themselves? You know, it seems a little weird. It's like, you know, you got a lot of people on the water board, you know, five members of the water board, and they talk about water. You know, if you're on the planning board, you talk about planning. You know, the notion that you just talk about yourself is a little weird. So there were a few people on the council last night who seemed to be maybe implicitly acknowledging that silliness by saying, you know, maybe what we really need to do is just do a lot more effective outreach to people who are younger
to get on
cities and boards.
Yeah.
And I don't know the fellow's name, but he spoke at public comment recently. He's a kid. He's like 12 or 13 years old, and he's been coming to the city council meetings. So he said he's actually applied to be on two different city boards. He hasn't been selected.
I don't know. I think there should be an age limit.
Maybe
13.
But there is no age limit.
Well, there should be. I'm sorry. I don't want to sit in a group with a 13-year-old.
No. Listen, if you have an advisory committee that has 20 members, I don't think it's a problem. In fact, we actually have the what is it called? The youth. You used to call it the Kids Council. Now it's got a different name.
Yeah.
But that has kids on it. But
it's because it's called the Kids Council, Robert.
Right. I know.
I don't want to hear about... I mean, they could have there's public comment. You can come to public comment.
I agree.
But to sit on a board... I don't know. It's like
you might.
It's like one a woman that has to sit on a board of 12 men. It's the same kind of.
But you might have a 17-year-old.
That's different than 13.
I agree. Okay. Okay.
I'll go with. All right.
So we tell this kid he's got to wait a couple of years.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
But the thing is I don't think it's all that crazy that we actually have some people who are quite young, maybe not grade school.
I would like them to be a high schooler. Or
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree, and I think that would be a good thing. And you know, we're not necessarily putting them onto regulatory boards where
as
they
long
have
as their parents
decisions.
Aren't coaching them.
Yeah,
all
that
the time.
Would be really dreadful.
The hovering
if that
parent
were true.
That's really
yeah.
They're like a proxy for the parent.
The civic helicopter parent.
Oh God.
Right? Yeah. acting surreptitiously through their child. Right.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but you know, it did occur to me that you know maybe what we really need to do is to. Is that create another board or two that actually would be a really good opportunity for people of a certain age to sort of do things. So I was just sort of joking around. I said, maybe what we need is like the board of fun.
Yeah, board
you
of
know?
Fun,
You know, people down at MIT planners, they know me. I'm always saying like, well, where are you going to put the miniature golf course, right?
Yeah.
Or where are you going to put the batting cages? And, you know, I have to tell you, you know, whether you're looking at city council, I think it was that Councilor Mallon actually suggested doing some fun games in front of City Hall. But
didn't we do that? Didn't they set that up once?
Yeah, and the Arts Council.
We do that.
The Arts Council does some of this, I think.
Well, you don't go to Roxy's in the back room there where they have all kinds of like.
That's true. That's true.
You don't do that. It's very loud. But there are youth do
I've
find these places.
I have
you,
been
you've
there.
Gone in the back
oh,
room?
Oh, yeah, I've been in there, yeah. Sure.
Isn't it loud?
Yeah, yeah. But
and what
been,
is it?
I've
just mainly is it mainly pinball machines?
Yeah. But I'm talking about some other fun things. And I was actually thinking about remember a few years ago when they were promoting pedestrian stuff and walking Henrietta Davis?
Yeah.
They had this whole campaign about the golden shoes.
Oh, right.
So where everybody, they hid shoes around the city.
Oh, right, like a scavenger.
So that's what we need to do.
Okay.
We need a board that does it creates games.
Yeah, but somehow I keep thinking we have a commission or board or community group that does that, don't we?
I don't know if we do.
Well, Central Square Business
so that's
Association
my idea.
Could do something like that.
I agree. I agree. But we need more fun in this city.
How about the Arts Task Force?
Well, the arts can help out here. So.
Yeah, the arts could
anyway,
help.
We'll talk about this important
over.
Issue
there
in the future.
All right.
See you next time on Inside Out.
Bye.